Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. And today is a Donna Day. Yes, we don't have a guest today. The guest that had been scheduled, something came up. So, it's an open mic day. That's right. It's going to be open mic for the entire hour, so you'll be able to call in and chat with me. So let me give out the telephone number right at the top, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Well, I thought I'd start off with a quote by Leo Tolstoy. This man was highly recognized. He had a very, very difficult life. But his philosophies have become classic for many people. His writings were very, very powerful. And this is a comment that he made about life. He said, life is a place of service. And in that service, one has to suffer a great deal that is hard to bear, but more often to experience a great deal of joy. But that joy can be real only if people look upon their life as a service and have a definite object in life outside themselves and their personal happiness. Now, many people, many famous people that we've read about or we've heard about, were well aware that often very traumatic things have affected their lives. But they had something that they wanted to leave as a legacy. And they did exactly that, enriching the lives of the people that came behind them. I think so often the idea that everything is going to be just hunky-dory and peachy keen in life is perpetuated by a level of ignorance. It doesn't mean that you're supposed to be wallowing in hell and misery for your life, but it means that we need to become aware of the fact that most of it, and I can raise my hand on this one. Most of us, when everything is going along delightfully smoothly, we really don't have much incentive to do anything else. It often can bring in an aspect of apathy. It can cause us to develop a level of laziness. And this is something that when all of a sudden life smacks us real good, we sit up, we're alert, and we either cry, poor me, or we go, ooh, I think I better get busy and do something. We grow because of the experiences of life. And an image that often I recall was one that was shared with me so many years ago, and that is that we human beings are like steel. And steel becomes stronger at the higher temperatures. To really make steel do what it's supposed to do, have the strength it's supposed to have, you have to put it through a lot of fire. And it has to reach that point where it becomes very fluid, very liquidy. Then you can use that and mold it into what you want. Now think about your own life. How many times has life given you a good swift kick? Or handed you a huge dose of castor oil of experience that you go, oh, please, I needed this like I needed a hole in my head. What happens, though, is that you have to stand up. Now, I say have to. You really don't have to do anything. You can be a bump on a rock for the rest of your life. But the truth is, life demands that we bring forth something of ourselves. And we see it over and over again. I look at the situation in Oklahoma. I look at what's gone on in New York, on the East Coast, with the storms that have happened. I look at the tragedies of the shootings that have occurred. The various things that go on, many of them we don't hear about. The battles for life in hospitals. People doing and creating things that sometimes we don't even imagine possible, but because they see a need, because someone that they've loved or they've seen something in nature that's been abused and they go, I've got to be able to do something. That is what generates change, and that is what makes us aware we can make our lives better. We are all experiencing the benefits of the people that have gone before us, good, bad, and indifferent. And it is important for us to understand we can be discerning. We can select. We can make a choice. And that each of us as individuals have that opportunity, and I also feel a responsibility to be able to do that. And it's up to each of us to invest in ourselves, because when we invest in ourselves, we're going to invest in life. I was chatting with a couple of students yesterday, and as I was talking with them, the aspect of school and study, all of this had presented a tremendous challenge. One of the students was having a terrible time with mathematics. And finally, and I had encouraged the student quite a bit, finally, they found someone they could understand relating to mathematics. And what happened is this person was able to go forward in their education, do statistics and other things that in their wildest dreams they never even thought they were going to be able to approach. Now, with graduation just around the corner, both of these students are going to be going out into the world richer because of their education. Also, an understanding that they can tackle life. They got through school. They have been able to accomplish what they didn't think they could accomplish. One student is an adult in their 50s. The other student is in their 30s. So this is something that I share with you today because, as Tolstoy said, you need to realize that you're really here to serve life. And you, when you have a definitive objective in life, you're going to have a level of personal happiness that other people are going to tap you on the shoulder and wonder, how do you do this? How is it that you feel so fulfilled in life? That's an amazing thing. But that's the magic of you. That is the magic of you. So I just wanted to start off the program this morning. This is an open mic day. You are more than welcome to give me a call if you'd like from me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here is the toll-free number that you will call in to. It is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And all I need, if you're a first-time listener, is your first name or your initial. And then after that, all you have to do is relax. Of course, I always like to know where you're calling in from. And then I'll tell you what I perceive. This is my gift to you. And then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. Well, we've got a weekend coming up, Memorial Day weekend, and so many people, oh my goodness, here in the Seattle area, they're taking extra days off because they are going to go and play. Well, here in the Pacific Northwest, it's raining, so you better have your rain gear, but it's absolutely gorgeous out. And of course, there's so many people here that just love to be out and about around Mount Rainier and so many other natural environments to get away from the city, so to speak. So a lot of people are taking this opportunity and they're having a four-day weekend. Well, you may be barbecuing as part of a celebration, so I'm going to have something to share with you later on in the show. But just a little bit of history. You may or may not be aware that Robert Myers, a historian, said the man behind the idea for Memorial Day was promoted by a fellow by the name of Henry C. Wells. Now, the year was 1866, and Henry is a druggist who was very much involved locally with his veterans organizations and groups, and he felt that it was very important that the graves of those who had sacrificed, had given their lives for what they believed in, should be honored. Well, it started off as Decoration Day. That's how it began. and it was celebrated for the first time on May the 5th. And then the Grand Army of the Republic. Have you ever heard of them? Well, they existed. It was the Union Vets' principal support group picked up on the Waterloo celebrations and spread the idea throughout the country. It began in New York in 1873, and eventually it became the national holiday that we all celebrate and enjoy. And it's for honoring the dead of all wars, those men and women that have served to the best that they possibly could to defend what they believed was right. However it goes, whoever they are, they still are being remembered and should be remembered. The warriors of the past and the warriors of the present. So take a moment whenever you're celebrating. If you're celebrating Saturday, Sunday, Monday, take a moment to just know and appreciate. Those warriors have often very special stories to share, and on Monday I will be sharing a few of those stories with you out of honor and respect for those who have made it possible. And I have had some of them in my family and in my husband's family that sacrificed a great deal so that we could enjoy the privileges and freedoms that we have today. Donna Sebo here. Give me a call if you would like to chat at 888-627-6008. Libraries. All of you know I'm really big in the reading. Well, when you figure I've interviewed over 3,000 authors since I started my show 12 years ago, yes, that is significant. And on average, I read 400 to 600 books a year. So a library to me is just absolutely like the Taj Mahal for literacy. And I just so appreciate Carnegie making that investment so many generations ago for anyone to have access to libraries. Well, there's a woman, Barbara Milner, who works for a local library, and libraries are changing on what they're doing. Yes, we all know about the computers. We all know about the electronic technical age that has been incorporated into libraries. That's wonderful. But what about seed banks? You're hearing me correctly. This is an incredible idea, and you may want to talk about this with your local library, dependent on the environment that it's in. Now, Barbara is the director of her local library, and she said, "We're very proud of all of the items, CDs, DVDs, audio tapes, books, magazines. I mean, the library is just loaded with goodies." But she said they now are checking out seeds. You heard me correctly. Seeds, S-E-E-D-S. Hundreds of varieties. Now, how did this come about? Well, she said it was started by a woman by the name of Stephanie Sison. Now, she's the manager of a local nonprofit agricultural and horticultural center. And she had a conversation one day with Barbara saying that people will make comments about how hard it is to grow things. Apparently in their local area, the soil is not especially conducive to a lot of different plants. She said, "I'd really like to start a seed bank for plants that can withstand the climate, the altitude, and the growing season. And people could borrow seeds like they do books. And my staff will show them how to harvest the seeds, and they can return them when it gets cold again." Wow, what an idea. Thinking outside the box, this is big time. Well, Barbara got excited. She said, "Let's try it." And this is what happened. Stephanie's staff, because they're very, very knowledgeable about that which grows most effectively in their local area, selected the seeds and barber staff organized him. This past January, the Seed Bank opened for business. Now, what happens is the people can come in, can pick up seeds, and then what they want you to do is when the cycle is finished and the seed pods are there, they want you to collect the seed pods, make a record of it, and take them back to the library or to this wonderful agricultural and horticultural center. And that way you can perpetuate things. What a great idea. See, lots of times children, and there are many adults, don't have an idea of what it takes to put food in the grocery stores. And when people are encouraged to learn about this, and they have to weed, and they have to deal with bugs, and they have to deal with all kinds of things, when you go through the educational process, you have a deeper respect for what it takes to feed people. And we're talking about millions of people. We've got well over 300 million people in the United States, and we've got millions around the world that we feed with the crops that we grow in this country. So this is just something that I think is absolutely marvelous. So just tuck it away. And if you're a person that loves to be out in the yard, loves to plant flowers, or wants to grow food, however it is that you want to make this work, do it. I had a neighbor. I was walking by her yard. Her yard reminds me of these English gardens. Look, they've got so many things growing in them. It looks almost totally disorganized. And she opened up a bunch of pods that were on certain plants. She said, here, take these seeds. Now, these seeds were so tiny, so tiny. You could barely see them in the palm of your hand. She said, just go and toss them into your garden. She said, some of them will take, some of them won't. By golly, I did. And we have some gorgeous flowers that came up this year. It's amazing. I didn't do much of anything. But by golly, there they are, blooming their hearts out this year, all because of this neighbor that said, here, take some seeds. So this is a cool idea from a local library, and I think that you would find it perhaps something you might want to pass along to your local library. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. Telephone number to call into is 888-627-6008. Now, I want to let you know about my guests that are going to be coming up next week. On Monday, Memorial Day, we are going to be talking with Dr. Anne Marie Evers. We're going to be talking about affirmations. This book is amazing, and I think if you really enjoy affirmations and what they do, they feed the subconscious with good information, you're going to really like Dr. Anne. Then, The Wizard of Us, Jean Houston. This is a lady that is well known in metaphysical circles. She has taken a story, The Wizard of Oz, and compiled a whole different twist with it, and I know you'll enjoy it. Wild Medicine Solution, Guido Mace. Now, Guido is an individual who really is very, very special. Very, very special. This Wild Medicine Solution is something that is coming forth on so many levels in today's world. Those of you that are involved in homeopathy and herbs, I think you will really find this interesting. And then Waiting in the Silence, Rosalind Burney is going to be my guest. This is a sci-fi. Yes, it's sci-fi of a unique positioning. So we're going to be talking with Rosalind Burney and then bouncing back, Linda Graham. If you feel like life has kicked you in the teeth, well, Linda is going to be sharing some things with us so that you can bounce back. Donna Sebo here. This is an open mic day. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here is the telephone number to call into, 888-627-6008. 888-627-6008. Have you ever had precognitive dreams? I have. Many, many people have. Now, often these precognitive dreams will come in when you least expect them. And there's something about these dreams that make you so aware. You cannot forget them when you wake up. You just can't. They stay with you. Well, that is what happened on May 2nd, 1812. It happened to a gentleman by the name of John Williams. And this was in Cornwall, England. He had three dreams of death one night. Three of them. Now, John Williams was a respected man. This is a very intelligent man, a very logical man. And this is not at all what he expected. Using a term today, this would be a download of information that he didn't anticipate in any way, shape, or form. He lived in Cornwall, England, and each of these dreams were exactly the same. It was like something saying, we are going to run this to make sure that you remember it. You're going to get it three times. Now, when Mr. Williams got up after having these dreams, he told his wife about the feeling of dread that he was experiencing. But, like so many, she just said, oh, for heaven's sake, you're just having a nightmare. Just go back to bed. Go back to sleep. Well, he wasn't able to sleep very well after these three dreams. Now, he was not interested in politics at all. But this is what his dreams told him. He found himself in the House of Commons. He found himself entering the building and watching a man in a snuff-colored coat with metal buttons loitering in the lobby just before a smaller man wearing a white waistcoat and blue coat showed up. The first fellow was looking very frantic, very anxious. He pulls a pistol out from beneath his jacket and shoots the small man in the chest. Blood spurts out everywhere from the victim, and he falls to the ground dead. Asking after the identity of this assassinated man, Williams, he actually asked during the dream, who is this man? He was told it was Spencer Percival, Chancellor of the Exchequer and Prime Minister of Britain. Now, this information was given to him very, very clearly, three times. So, John Williams thought, I have got to go to London. I've got to warn Percival. However, when he talked to his friends about it, they talked him out of it. A week goes by. Spencer Percival himself is having a very disturbing dream. He shares with his family the nightmare that a fellow wearing a coat with brass buttons had shot him in the House of Commons. Mm-hmm. Now, contrary to the friends, with John Williams saying, no, this is your imagination, don't go, Percival's family said, please do not go to the House of Commons. This is a warning for you. Now, Percival's dream ended by going black, which Percival assumed to mean that he had died. Well, he said, having a dream doesn't justify my staying home. He was murdered a short time later. Now, a few days after this event in Cornwall, and you have to remember, they didn't have cell phones in the 1800s. It took a long time for news to go from one point to another. John Williams heard that Percival had, in fact, been assassinated. It was a little bit of time afterwards when Williams was in London, because this experience really shook him up. He was looking at a drawing in one of the print shops representing the place and circumstances which attended Mr. Percival's death. It matched exactly what was in his dream. Now, one might ask, why? had a client a number of years ago, and during the time when I was living in California, who had had a dream experience that awakened her at, like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. And her dream was she saw a particular plane. And she knew the plane, she saw the plane crash. She saw the number on the plane. She knew where the plane was located. She was told the airport that this plane was heading towards. And I remember her calling me because it was that morning there was a major plane crash. I don't remember the number on the plane or any of that detail at this moment. But she had gotten everything in complete clarity. She had received a download of something that was happening. When she talked to me about it, she said, I didn't know what to do. Now, when she had the dream, it was prior to the crash. And so we discussed this at length. She said, what does someone do when you have an experience like this? Well, she went back to sleep after having this dream experience about the plane, and she goes back to sleep, and then she's awakened by her radio alarm clock, and the news is being given about this crash at this particular airport, and they gave the flight number. And she was just feeling so badly about this. What's going on? What is happening when this kind of information is downloaded into it? Now, this woman had never, ever had an experience like this before. Found out later, there were other people that had seen information about this plane flight. And there was a group that did research on dreams that announced that there had been, 20 different calls that they had gotten, people saying, I've had this dream about XYZ flight. And this happens because there is a factor of probability. That's the word that I will use. Every thought, everything that is going on at any given time is out there. In all truthfulness, there's no such thing as a secret. We like to think there is, but there isn't. And for whatever reason, there is this information processing system, think of the internet, and it will download into whatever program availability it might have for communication. Now, could that flight have been stopped? Could the crash have been prevented? I'm not able to answer that. But the fact was that this information had been given, and this crash was caused by a mechanical failure of some kind. And I believe there were a number of people killed. So it's almost as if there is a multiple aspect to this. One, it's giving out information about something evolving. In the case of Sir Percival, there was a warning that was given out where he could possibly have averted it. It was sent to him, and it was sent to a man that was in another community miles away. He made a choice to ignore it because it didn't fit into logic. We can always say, what if? But he made a choice, even though he had been given the information, to proceed with his normal activities. Why was it given to John Williams? Maybe he had his mind computer open and receptive, and the information came to him. It might have even come to some other people. The mind is a fascinating component. It is unlimited in its capabilities. And I share these stories with you because sometimes I think we need to pay attention. And sometimes we're given stuff in advance. I know it's happened with me, where you're told that something's going to be evolved and actually how it's going to turn out. I can say that because I know it has turned out with me. And, hey, I've also ignored information that's been given to me. Have you ever done that? This is Donna Sebo. It's an open mic day, 888-627-6008. When we come back, a wonderful story and even a recipe for good barbecue. Absolutely. We'll be coming back in just a moment.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Do you have a product or service that you would like people to know about? Internet radio is a powerful medium that can assist you in reaching people who like to shop online and pass by electronic word of mouth information about you, your products, and or services. The Donna Sebo Show reaches around the world, and you can be part of that enterprising network. For more information, contact Vision Broadcasting via donna@delphiinternational.com
or call 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
If you are an author and would like to be a guest on the Donna Sebo Show, please send a review copy of your publication along with a press release to the Donna Sebo Show, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. Allow 6 to 8 weeks for your material to be reviewed. Again, the address to send your material to is the Donna Sebo Show, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497.
Hi, this is Donna. I'm going to be sharing a recipe with you that is fixing short ribs in the oven. Now, maybe you're barbecuing, but I've got this recipe. It is so delicious. And how about some chili biscuits to go along with it? This is a little bit of the southern stuff. Mm-hmm. So have a pad of paper handy and a pen. I'm going to share this with you because if you're like me, you're lazy. When it comes to cooking, you want to be able to fix it, forget it, make it easy, and you want it to be so yummy that people are going to say, please give me your recipe. I just love it when people do that. Do you ever have that happen to you? It happens to me. I love it. So I'm going to share that recipe with you. But I want to talk a little bit about technology. And technology when it comes to wine. We are always able to learn something new, and all of us have, at one time or another, had an experience. If you go and open up a bottle of wine, of course, they use cork, and cork has been used for generations, and there's a reason, because cork reeks, and it's a very good thing to use. But what we have found in the past few years is a lot of winemakers have gone from using cork to using screw caps. So someone sent me some information on this, and I thought, wow, I wanted to share it with you. And winemakers really are always anxious about preserving the quality of the flavors of their wine. It's a highly competitive business, and my goodness, I did an interview, I think it was in 2002, with Paul Fetzer of Fetzer Wineries. And they had discovered organic wines. And, oh, that's a topic that's absolutely amazing. But I will tell you, I really got an education. I'm not a big wine connoisseur. And I know if I like something, I like it. If I don't like it, I don't like it. And that's just how simple it is with me when it comes to wine. But wines have flavors, they have bouquets, and there's all kinds of descriptions for those people that just are avidly dedicated to the wonderful joy of experiencing wine. And we have a very good friend that's that way. But I was surprised that this technology really had a lot of problems for a lot of years, the screw top. Now, today, they have temperature control, pneumatic presses, stainless steel fermenting tanks, and the quality of wines today is amazing. It is absolutely amazing. And it used to be that France was the place that you thought anything that came from France, that was the best. Well, I got news for you. California wines, Washington wines, there are wines being grown in all parts of the world. Australian wines are delicious. And you have so many of these wonderful places now that have their own specialty wines. And the screw tap, the cap on this, it's called a Stelvin. And this is the leading manufacturer of the screw cap, is a technology that has come about that's been just incredibly important. And if a wine has a lot of flavor to it and a good level of what they call acidity, when you use the wine cap, it's going to stay that way. It used to be when you had maybe a half a bottle of wine and you go and you put the cork back in. Well, having the screw top really makes a difference. It really does make a difference. Your flavor will stay there. Now, it wasn't always this way. Early screw caps, when they were designed, they allowed too much air into the wine once the bottle was open. And, of course, that's a disaster for wine. Or it let wine come into contact with the paper between the cap's plastic seal and the metal cap. Now that is an absolute no-no, just because of the chemical interaction. However, this new screw cap design, that's right, the Stelvin, is making a phenomenal difference. So now, because of this new technology, this manufacturing facility is supplying millions, probably billions of these, to wine producers around the world, and it's making a big difference. How can you do something better? Well, if you are aware, you may get an idea that could set you up. How many times when we think of inventive technology, we'll think of, oh, just a Steve Jobs or somebody else, but think about the person that invented the safety pin. Think about the person that put together the straight pin, the zipper. All of these aspects of technology that made life so much easier. Velcro. I mean, there's just so many things in so many levels of industry. Flash freezing for food that allows the food to maintain its nutritional strength. It's amazing what we have been able to achieve. All because someone somewhere, and you may be one of those people at some point in time. Don't ever think that ideas, innovation, is ever going to go away, because someone is always going to come up with a better way. It's exciting. And a lot of these inventors, you've never heard anything about. You don't even know their names. We just take what we use for granted. Keep that in mind. Okay, are you ready for something scrumptiously yummy? It's a fair fragrance when it's cooking. You're just going to salivate. I'll tell you what, don't have too many appetizers when you serve these oven barbecued short ribs with chili biscuits, because you want people to really be hungry so that they are going to feel like they have just had a feast to feast. This is a wonderful recipe. It's 6 to 8 servings, dependent on the appetite of your people. Now, what you're going to need, here are the ingredients. Now, there's going to be quite a few spices that go into this, and the reason you need it is because this is going to give a tremendous flavor to your short ribs. And if you haven't fixed short ribs in a while, they're not always that easy to find. Go to your butcher and request. You're going to need about 3 pounds of them, and your butcher will cut them into 1-inch pieces. But this is really flavorful. Now, this is what your ingredients, these are your ingredients that you will need. You're going to need 3 tablespoons of vegetable oil, 3 tablespoons of vegetable oil, 2 large onions. You want to just go chop, chop. You want big, chunky pieces of onions. You need 4 large garlic cloves. You want to mince that. You're going to need 2 16-ounce cans of tomatoes. Do not drain them. You need 2 cups of beef stock, 1/3 cup of cider vinegar, 1/4 cup of firmly packed light brown sugar, 3 tablespoons of Worcestershire, 2 tablespoons of Dijon mustard, And if you wanted to add a little bit of extra kick, you could use the spicy. That's your choice, but use this recipe first before you make that shift. 1.5 teaspoons of salt. 1.5 teaspoons of cayenne pepper. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is going to be on the spicy side. You could cut that down if you wanted to, but spice? Now, a thought here. The person who put this recipe together said you want to increase your cayenne pepper to 2 teaspoons if mixture is to be frozen, because the flavor will be affected if you wanted to fix this and then freeze it. I'd say go for the gusto. Go for the 2 teaspoons. But anyway, 1.5 teaspoons of cayenne pepper, 1.5 teaspoon of freshly ground pepper, 1.5 teaspoon paprika, 1.5 teaspoon of turmeric. You want to have 10 fresh parsley spears. You want to tie them together. You're going to need 2 1/4 inch thick lemon slices. You're going to need 1 pound of medium boiling potatoes. You want to peel them and cut them into 1-inch cubes, and 1 pound of medium carrots cut into 2-inch cubes. Then I'll give you the recipe for the chili biscuits. Now, this is how simple it is. This is really, really simple. Put on your broiler. You want to put your ribs in a single layer in a shallow roasting pan. Boil them 4 inches from the heat until they're brown. You want to brown them. You could also do this in a Dutch oven if you wanted to. You could brown them. Then you want to preheat your oven to 350 degrees. If you have used a Dutch oven rather than the broiler to brown your short ribs, you want to take your short ribs out, put them in a platter, and then you want to add your oil, your 3 tablespoons of vegetable oil. You want to put in your onions and garlic, cook them until they're just nice and golden brown, very, very fragrant. It's going to take a few minutes. It depends on how long you do it. Then you add your ribs, and then you will take all of the other ingredients, the tomatoes, the beef stock, the vinegar, sugar, Worcestershire, mustard, salt, all the spices, your parsley and your lemon, increase the heat, bring everything to a boil, put it in your oven, cover it, and you're going to let it bake at 350 degrees for 2 hours. Just let the oven do its thing. Now, tip here. If you're going to be gone for a long period of time, if you have a large crock pot, you can put this in a large crock pot, put it on like 200, 250 degrees, and just let it cook in the crock pot. It could be cooking for 7 hours, 8 hours, whatever you want. Crock pots are wonderful. What you're going to want to do, though, after it's been cooking for 2 hours, if you're doing this in the oven, you then add your potatoes and carrots, and then you just bake it maybe like for about another 40 minutes. You want to take your lemon and parsley out, and then you want to degrease the sauce. Taste it. Now, this is a dish that you can prepare in advance. This is not something that you have to fix that in the same day. So if you're really wanting to be time efficient, you can fix it in advance. You can freeze it if you want, and then reheat it. But you need to remember that this is something where actually it's going to taste better the next day because the flavors are going to marry. It's just one of these wonderful recipes, chili biscuits. Now, these will go with a lot of different dishes, but with this particular dish, it is really going to be a compliment. Now, you can go ahead and use a biscuit mix if you want. If you're one of these people who wants to save time, use a biscuit mix. And what you're going to do, you're going to add to that biscuit mix, you're going to add your chili powder, maybe a little bit of salt, 1/4 cup of freshly grated Parmesan cheese, some freshly minced, about 2 tablespoons minced of fresh cilantro or parsley, and then add whatever milk that you're going to be adding to that biscuit mix if you're going to do it. But if you want to make your biscuits, you want to make them from scratch, which is the best, you're going to need 1 tablespoon of unsalted butter, 1 medium onion minced, 1 large garlic clove minced. You're going to need 2 cups of sifted all-purpose flour, 1 tablespoon of baking powder, 2 teaspoons of chilling powder, 1 teaspoon of salt, 1/4 cup of freshly grated Parmesan cheese, 2 tablespoons of minced fresh cilantro or parsley, 1/3 cup of well-chilled lard or solid vegetable shortening or butter. 3/4 cup of milk. Now, for the biscuits, you're going to cook your onion and garlic until it's soft, and then you let it cool. Your flour, baking powder, spices, salt, whisk them in a large bowl. Stir in your cheese and cilantro. Cut in your butter, your lard, or your solid vegetable shortening of choice with a plate pastry blender or 2 knives until it resembles coarse meal. Then you take the cooled onion and garlic and mix that in and add your milk to your flour mixture until it comes together. Turn it onto a lightly, turn it out onto a lightly floured surface. Knead it 3 to 5 times. Roll it out to 1 inch thickness, 1/2 inch thickness. Cut out the biscuits. You bake them at 450 degrees. And it's going to take maybe 12 to 15 minutes to bake these. You can also, when the ribs are just about ready to be prepared and you've got that luscious sauce, you can put the biscuit, the uncooked biscuit, on top of those ribs. Put them back in the oven. And you'll be able to serve the whole meal immediately. Personally, I like the biscuits on the side. That's my specialty. This is Donna Sebo. Let's take a break. When we come back, I will tell you the story about a family that experienced a miracle. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be back in just a moment.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Have you ever had a paranormal experience, such as seeing a ghost, having precognitive dreams, out-of-body experiences, or other happenings? If so, Donna would like to hear from you. She's putting together a book of 100 stories from people who would like to tell their story. If you'd like to submit yours, send an email to donna@delphiinternational.com. Again, send your story to donna@delphiinternational.com. Be sure to include your contact information as well. Thank you.
Hi, this is Donna. I'm so delighted that you're with me today. And don't forget, even on Memorial Day, we are going to be broadcasting live. And it will be a fabulous way to start the week because we're going to be starting off with affirmations. So I want you to be sure to take time, start your day, the holiday, with a wonderful positive impact. By the way, telephone lines are open if you'd like to chat with me. Let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight at 888-627-6008. Yesterday, I had started to share with you a story about this wonderful family, and regrettably, we ran out of time. This family, well, it's Brandy, that's the wife, Patrick is the husband, and they have a beautiful, beautiful baby boy, Judson. Their story is, to me, a phenomenal one. And I think whenever we can hear what other people, stories about what other people have gone through and how they weathered a crisis and what a difference it made and all of the people that were involved to make the miracle occur, I think it's wonderful. We need to remember that we are a part of this experience of life. We're not lonely islands existing in nothingness. So I wanted to share this with you. Brandy was 10 days away from having her baby, and she and her husband lived in Texas, and of course he was absolutely excited about this new baby coming into their lives. 10 days, that's all it was. Well, Patrick happened to be working, and he comes in, and she said, "Oh my goodness. He is so tired," and he said, "You know, I think I'm just going to go lay down." He's going to go lay down on the couch. Well, she said, "Oh, geez." So she was in another room, and she's listening, and she goes, "Oh, my goodness, he sounds so loud. He's snoring again." Can you relate to that, ladies? Boy, the husband's snoring. They sound like a Mack truck or a freight train. But then she was aware. This wasn't his normal sound. And she quickly goes in to the living room where he's on the couch. His head was back, and she said he had stopped breathing. And so she called 911 right away. And all she could think of is, oh, my God, my husband, is he dying? What's going on here? My baby, it's due in a few days. Well, fortunately, paramedics were pretty close by. They got him in to the ambulance immediately. They had to use the defibrillator twice to get a pulse. It's a very critical situation. And this is a young man. We're not talking about someone that's in their 60s, 70s, or 80s. Not at all. Very young man. And Brandy was beside herself. So they end up following, a neighbor takes her, and they go to the hospital. Well, Patrick and Brandy obviously were very close. They were thrilled when she had gotten pregnant. Patrick is only 37 years of age, and here she is being driven to the hospital. Her husband is dying. And when they arrive, the emergency team, the trauma team, determined that Patrick had a 100% blockage in a primary artery. They put him into surgery immediately. They put him into a medically induced coma. Now, they were very hopeful about his body recuperating, but they didn't know how the brain was going to recuperate. Patrick had been without oxygen for quite a bit of time, and they had used the paramedics, with all of their training and expertise, they'd used cooling blankets because they found that this helps prevent brain damage, post-heart attack. But no one would know until they took him out of the medically induced coma. In fact, they didn't even know if he was going to wake up. So she went in, she was spending time with her husband, she was talking to him all of the time, and she was begging him, don't leave him. Your son is going to be born in a short period of time. Please come back to him. 4 days go by. There is an RN. His name is Charlie. He was the head of the cardiac care unit. He called Brandy into his office. He said, I will have your husband walking out of here. Isn't that a powerful statement for someone to make? No guarantees here. But he said, I will have your husband walking out of here. Well, she went through a big shift. She said, I am going to act as if my husband is coming home. Well, her son wasn't quite ready to be born, so they sent her home, and she packed an overnight bag with Patrick's clothes, as if this is what he was going to need when they got him out of the hospital, photo of her, and she said, I even went so far as to polishing his boots. Everything I did was, my husband is coming home. Well, the night after she got home, Brandy's water broke, and Judson Thomas came into the world, healthy and beautiful. She took a copy of his footprints to Patrick's bedside, a floor above her in the hospital. 3 days later, Patrick came out of a coma. They removed the ventilator, and he said one word, Judson. He had heard everything Brandy had said to him about their new baby boy. Sometimes Patrick and I still can't believe how lucky we are, Brandy says, and we know we have everything we need. We know miracles happen. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Just as this young couple really did everything possible, as well as the people around them, to make the miracle happen so you can have an influence on the lives of the people around you. You know, you're a walking miracle yourself. Have a magnificent weekend, and I'll be back with you on Monday. Take care. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.